This is The Blade and Beyond with the DC Dynamic Duo. Learn every detail about life on both ends of the knife. And now, live from Washington, D.C., your hosts, board-certified facial plastic surgeon, Dr. Michael Salmanik, and board-certified plastic surgeon, Dr. Troy Pittman.
Hello, everybody. It is Sunday, January 8th, 2023. I'm Dr. Troy Pittman, and welcome to The Blade and Beyond.
And I'm Dr. Michael Salmanik. Welcome to our podcast. It has been a little bit since we have recorded this.
Yes, Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year. And we've been just busy for the month of December. There was a little bit of traveling for the weekend, so we were unable to record. And we had some cool events that we went to.
Yeah, so let's see, Kennedy Center Honors.
Which was amazing. It was our second year going there.
Yeah, we took my mom for her 70th birthday, and I think she's still walking on air. She had such a fun time.
Yeah, the honorees were so good. Gladys Knight, George Clooney, Amy Grant, Tia Leone, and who? Oh, you too. Hello.
Yeah, Tanya Leone. Tia Leone is from Wayne's World.
Well, okay.
Yeah, they were great. The show was great. It's always fun to kind of see celebrities. You know, George Clooney, like 1 foot away from you, is kind of surreal.
His wife is gorgeous, Amal.
She does not look real.
She doesn't look real. And
but she doesn't look fake.
No.
She just looks like an amazing human being.
We also saw Julia Roberts, which I'm such a huge fan of. She was wearing, for any of you that didn't catch the broadcast of it on last month, she was wearing like a dress that had all of little like George Clooney photos, including photos of her and him. It was really cool and really funny. So they did a great job. That was an evening and a Sunday evening nonetheless.
Yeah.
So we had to take Monday morning off because you don't leave there till around 1 a.m.
Yeah, because the dinner is after the show. And the broadcast filming is from like, what, 6 to 11. And then dinner starts at 11. And so it's a long night, but a fun night.
It was a fun night. And what else?
The White Lotus.
Hello, White Lotus. I mean,
We can talk about the White Lotus freely now. The season finale was weeks ago. So if you have not finished the White Lotus and you're listening to our podcast, turn it off and
for like
fast
a minute
forward.
And a half, 2 minutes.
Because everyone should be caught up. So we're allowed to freely talk about it.
I mean, Jennifer Coolidge is the gift that keeps on giving.
I love her.
She has reinvented herself, but not really because she's the same actress.
Yeah, same role. Stifler's mom.
And still makes me laugh. She doesn't even have to say anything funny. She just has to talk and I laugh.
Yeah, this White Lotus season, though, was much better than the first one.
Suspenseful, had some element of mystery. The Sicilian background and that hotel was amazing.
Beautiful. I mean, that's the Four Seasons.
Oh, I want to go there.
Okay, well, what else has been going on?
Oh, well, the reason we are, well, you're not really aware of this, but we're recording this a little later in the day. We had anticipated recording earlier, but one of our dogs, Piper, decided to have a little bout of pancreatitis today. So,
and it wasn't from too much drinking.
It wasn't from too much, no. So we ended up in the urgent care, like two good fathers sitting in there, which was a really good experience, surprisingly. They were amazing. They gave her some fluids. They drew labs. She feels better. She's walking around right now. You may hear her bark because she's got a new life. Revival.
Yeah, she gets so dehydrated. This is the third time she's had pancreatitis, and she gets so dehydrated when it happens that we feel bad for her.
Yeah, so, you know, she's tiny and she needs fluid, so she got little fluid. She's got a little Camelback right now that she's walking around with that will get absorbed throughout the night. So anyway, that's where we are today.
Yeah, so let's get started. You know, we're going to talk... This is your dream because both of our major segments today are both kind of head and neck oriented surgeries. We're not talking about breast and body today.
Oh, okay.
But so my topic today is otoplasty, commonly referred to as ear pinning. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that it's one of my favorite surgeries to perform. And it's something in our practice that you really don't do otoplasty. Even though you're an ear, nose, and throat doctor, you don't operate on the ears.
The irony of it all. Yeah, you know, there comes a point, I think, and some discover it earlier than later in their careers, that they figure out what they're good at and what they're not, and what they like and what they don't. And
those usually go hand in hand.
They do. And I don't like doing ear surgery.
Yeah.
I never really did when I was in training. Not like the ear pinning, but like even the more complicated things, like the hearing and all of those things. I just never really enjoyed it, even though it was a part of the specialty. But regardless, you love it. And so that just complements us even better.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that I feel like is really immediately gratifying to the patients. It's a fun surgery. It's kind of like a little nuanced thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people come to our office and they think I don't touch the face at all. We've been so good at marketing ourselves as the face expert and the body expert, but I do also do injectables and lasers and fillers and all of those things and ear surgery.
And you love ear surgery. You're very good at it and your results speak for themselves. I mean, they're really great.
Okay. So when we, you know, I think most of the time people come in looking for ear surgery because they're unhappy with their ears and their ears are sticking out. We see a lot of late teens also for this, where they're coming in, they're, you know, getting ready for the prom or something, or they're going to go to college. When the ears stick out on the side of the head, it really gives the patient kind of a juvenile look. It is kind of that howdy doody look. And it's always amazing to me when you set the ears back, how the whole person looks more mature. And that can be a child or that can be an adult. You know, we're seeing a lot more patients now, and I do think it's a result of COVID and everyone wearing those looped masks around their ears, where all of the ill-fitting masks were pulling everyone's cartilage.
Why are you showing me how the ears are forming? You're demonstrating for me.
I know. I'm sorry. Because I can't demonstrate for anybody
else.
I can see you. Yes, they can't see me, but you can see me through my voice. But the loops were pulling on people's ears, and cartilage is very moldable. And so I think day in and
even as adults, you think?
I do. And so even as adults pulling on the ears, it was almost like people were wearing a device that was reshaping their ears. Or, I mean, I have two theories. One is it's the masks. Two, it's the Zoom, where everyone was on Zoom and staring at themselves all day long. And just like they pick everything else apart, they're like, wait a minute, my ears stick out a little bit more than everybody else on the Zoom call.
Well, let's take a few steps back. You jumped ahead. I want you to explain really what causes what most would consider a prominent ear.
Sure.
I mean, there's a couple causes for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't just appear in adulthood. They've had it for since they were a child, but what causes it?
So there are really two things that cause the prominent ear. One is what's called effacement or flattening of the antihelical fold. So we have kind of, you know, this is a very hard topic to talk about without pointing at things. The top of our ear folds back naturally because there's a natural fold in the cartilage, and that is called the antihelix.
Correct.
In many patients, that antihelix either never formed, so the ear is very flat, which causes the ear to stick out, particularly on top. It almost looks like an L's
ear. Think of it as like two little satellite dishes that are sticking out from the side of the head.
Exactly. And so that flattening of the fold causes the ear to become prominent. But I also think more commonly, we see patients who have a deepened contral bowl. So that the bottom part of the ear, the deep part of the ear,
that's the area where you put your AirPods in.
Exactly. So that area of the ear is overformed. And so that causes the ear, the angle between the scalp and the ear to become much more obtuse. And that causes the ear to really point out.
It really pushes it out. So there's like two of those components that can push the ear out, keeping it prominent. And so those are the two things that are addressed during an otoplasty. Or you don't have to address both of them.
Yeah, sometimes it's just effacement of the antihelical fold. And we use stitches to reform the cartilage. I have a little device that I use, which actually thins the cartilage on the front of the ear.
I know you love that device.
So that thins the cartilage on the front of the ear to allow it to become more malleable. Because if we just put the sutures in and those sutures break and you haven't done anything to retrain the cartilage, then you can get a recurrence. And so the otobrader, the little cartilage thinning device, thins that cartilage and makes it more amenable to folding in the direction that you're trying to correct the
ear.
It's
kind of like a really rough nail file.
Yeah, exactly.
That roughens up the cartilage so it can fold how you want it to.
Right. So that's recreating the antihelical fold. The contral bowl, you know, this is very similar to kind of what you do when you're getting cartilage out of the ear for rhinoplasty. So a lot of times I'll take cartilage out of the back of the ear to allow the ear to sit back toward the head,
closer to the head in a
better way. And then we kind of tie the ear back down with sutures. So I think one of the reasons I really like this operation is you're really molding cartilage and you're actually fixing the ear with suture. So that's where the nuance comes into
that. And immediate results.
Yeah, immediate
results. So how long does it take to perform an otoplasty if someone comes in?
About 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours.
They go home the same day.
They go home the same day.
Dressing around their head.
It can be done under local anesthetic. Mm-hmm. I prefer not to do it under local anesthetic because I find that the patients, it's uncomfortable. You need to be able to get to the ear and get behind the ear. So the patient has to have their head completely turned. And I find an awake patient, it's a little bit hard on the neck to stay in that position. I think it's more comfortable for them to at least be sedated.
Yeah.
So they come in, it takes about 2 hours. There are absorbable sutures or stitches that go on the skin behind the ear, but it's totally hidden. There's one little suture on the front of the ear where we thin out the cartilage. And that incision is about 2 millimeters wide. It's tiny. And you're wrapped. So we wrap the ears to keep them in that position to put a little bit of pressure. We obviously don't want any blood to collect under the skin after the surgery. I have the patients at 36 hours take their head wrap off. And then you'd be able to go right back to work and kind of do whatever you want to do. The one thing is I like for everybody to have those headbands, you know, those flat headbands that women wear to hold their hair back, or like, you know, the headbands that you put makeup on with.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So I like to have those, them sleep with those where their ears are being held by the side of their head.
You mean the elastic one?
Yeah, the elastic
headbands. I'm thinking of that plastic one that has little teeth on it.
No, no, I'm talking about the flat headbands or like cloth headbands.
Yeah, yeah, cloth. Yeah.
And what that does is it just holds the ear, because one of the things I worry about is the patient rolling over in their sleep on their pillow and then kind of pulling their ear away from the side of their head while they're sleeping.
And so these results really should be permanent in most cases, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think once I use permanent suture because I don't ever want to chance that suture breaking or absorbing. So there is permanent suture. We train the cartilage to do what we want, or we're taking out cartilage. So the results should be permanent.
But even in, you know, some best case scenarios, even with permanent sutures, there is a small risk that the ear can revert back to not its original shape. That would be really unlikely, but a little bit more prominent than what it initially looked like postoperatively.
Yeah, and that's why I'm a big believer in scoring the cartilage and really trying to make the cartilage do what you want it to do, or taking out cartilage. Because I think if you're just relying on your sutures for the repair, your rate of recurrence is going to be much higher.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
So that's otoplasty.
Okay. So we are
going to... That's about as much facial plastic surgery as you're going to hear out of my mouth all year.
And listen, there's going to be so much more facial plastic surgery in this podcast. I'm so excited. But first, we're going to go to...
In the news.
All right. So in the news this week, and for the past couple weeks, we're going to talk about something that is totally off topic of plastic surgery.
Right. It's pop culture.
Harry and Meghan.
You're going to make me talk about Harry and Meghan.
I'm so excited. In a weird way, because I have such mixed feelings about this. We watched most of the documentary. The funny thing is...
The Netflix special.
Yeah, the Netflix. When you were out of town for like a day. My dad was in town for the holidays and I was like, hey dad, do you want to watch this like Harry and Meghan? He's like, yeah, I guess I'll watch an episode. And it was so funny after the first episode ended, he's like, does it roll into the second episode right away? I'm like, oh, look who's addicted now. So then when you got back, we watched, I think three, four, and five. We haven't finished in full disclosure, but I found it interesting and I found it slightly manipulative.
Okay, so what are your thoughts about Meghan and her intentions with this family?
Well, she knew what she was getting into. And I will just say, the narrative of her saying she didn't really know who Prince Harry was,
I don't believe it,
needs to end, because it totally discredits anything else that she says. Because I actually do find a lot of what she says believable. But when she says that, it like gets under my skin. I'm like, honey, you knew who he was.
Yeah, you know who Princess Diana's children are.
Unless you grew up with them, basically.
Yeah, unless you live on a different planet. Which, I mean, that's arguable. She may be.
But she is an actor. She has the ability to
turn it on and turn it off.
That's right. And there's no question, though, that they're in love. And clearly they're in love, or else he would not have taken
such drastic measures
to totally be just like
alienated from his family. Okay, so I have a lot to say about that. First of all, I think Meghan Markle is manipulative.
In what way, though?
I think that she knew what she was getting into.
Into, yeah.
She wanted to come in and be Kate. Or she's an actress, so she's looking for fame. And this was the ultimate fame. She was going to be a princess.
But she was married into money. It's not like she needed to get more fame.
It is the need to be loved and adored. And she wasn't loved and adored generally by the people like Kate was. But Kate's the primary. And
future queen.
Right. So, well, in consort. Yeah. But Kate is beloved and she's the primary. Meghan was a newcomer and was not being treated like the primary. And I think it made her mad. I think she wanted more attention. And so I think that set everything off on the wrong foot.
Well, she didn't want to buy into the norms of the royal family.
It's the royal family. It's a house built on tradition.
She talks about when she first met Kate, she's like, I was wearing like ripped jeans. And like, I'm like, well, they don't fall out of their royal roles. All right. This is like a mindset.
But it's not really a role. It's who they are.
But it's not like she's like, oh, I'm going to flip into royal Kate now. Like, she's royal Kate always.
Right.
And the issue that I have with the two of them is, oh, we're leaving the royals because we need, you know, we need to be able to raise a family and we need a little bit more anonymity.
And all they've done they're in the media every day.
And granted, you got to make a living because his paycheck has been, I think, torn away from him.
But wait, so here's my thing. If he was so distraught about losing his family or being alienated from his family, why did he write this book? If there's one way to alienate yourself from your family, if you write a book and you air all the dirty laundry.
I think what this is, this book and this constant media barrage, is a little brother that's desperate to fight back over a lifetime of feeling inferior.
Interesting.
And I clearly see it. The pathology is there. I'm not a psychologist, but I've read enough self-help books to understand that seems like what this is. And that's why he's not stopping. And it's like, we're almost
being inundated. He's really going for it.
Like tonight, 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper, that's going to be on tonight. And I'm not even sure I want to tune in because I think I know the whole interview.
Right. We've seen it all. His brother beat him up. And, we know what happens.
Anyway, if any of you have any thoughts on this, I would love to hear it through DMs or through our podcast post that we're going to put on Instagram.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts about Harry and Meghan.
Okay. We are going to move off of In the News. I'm like, we're actually sweating now.
We're on a pop culture tour because your topic today is also in the news constantly lately.
Well, right. It should be it's kind of in the news, but out of the news because we're leaving In the News. So we are going to talk about buccal fat reduction. And I cannot believe how much press this is getting.
Is it all the Lea Michele picture? Is that what started it?
No, let's start. We're going to talk about that because, first of all, I don't believe that she had buccal fat reduction. If you really look at a side by side, she has had augmented lips. Her lips are bigger.
Yes.
And this before and after that they're showing everyone with her like contoured, caved in area where the buccal fat is. She has larger cheeks. She has cheek filler. She has larger lips and she's got lashes on. And if you look at all those three things and you look at the actual concavity of her cheek, it's basically the same as it was before. Maybe she's lost a little weight, but she's contoured her face with filler and maybe a little bit of makeup. I don't think she's had buccal fat. So she has become this platform for like, this is what buccal fat can do. And and it's everything around the buccal fat area in her face that's been changed, but I don't think the buccal fat has. So let me jump into buccal fat. We've previously talked about this in podcasts, but we all have buccal fat. Some of us have larger buccal fat pads, and that can create a little bit of that cheeky appearance around the mouth, right? It's not the cheek up above. It's the cheek around like the corner of your mouth where the buccal fat pad is really located and can be larger in some individuals.
Right. So let's just back up 1 second, because I think a lot of people maybe are listening and thinking, where is the buccal fat?
I just said where it was.
Well, you said cheeky.
No, it's next to the corner of the mouth. If you go right there, it's right there. Okay. And some people just have their anatomy just has larger fat pads where they constantly look like they have like a full face at all times. Mm-hmm. And in those people, buccal fat reduction can actually provide a nice improvement to the contour of the face. And the reason why we are hearing about this over and over again is there's many doctors out there that say they don't believe in buccal fat reduction, because why would you want to take volume out of someone's face? Because we're going to need that as we get older. Well, do we need volume as we get older? That is a true statement.
Do we need volume there as we get older?
Right. And so that's where this misconception and potentially, I think, a little bit of misinformation lies, because that buccal fat, regardless of the size of it, is going to droop.
And become jowls.
And become a jowl as we get older. Now, not everyone needs their buccal fat reduced to prevent a jowl anyway, because the appropriate patient for buccal fat reduction is kind of what we just described. Someone with like a full face and looks kind of cheeky, you know, has that like baby cherub, chubby looking face.
Even though it's
independent
not,
of your weight.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of thin people have these chubby cheeks.
And the reason why that we are talking about this so much is I think it's because of the popularity of it. Many surgeons have just done it on anyone. And they haven't really considered appropriate patient selection for this. And so the person with already sort of a contoured face who wants to look more snatched, if you will, they are at risk for looking gaunt, older, because you're removing volume from their face when they really need it. And so they look kind of like anorexic, hollow, and not aesthetically appealing, I would say. So that's why we're talking about this.
Is there a way to look in the mirror for our listeners at home? Is there a test you can do on yourself to see if you're a candidate for buccal fat?
Not really. I really think you need someone who understands facial proportions and facial anatomy to look at you and assess the more global perspective of the face, rather than having someone try and self-diagnose themselves. Surprisingly, a lot of buccal fat reduction consults that I see have diagnosed themselves pretty accurately. Mm-hmm. There's a few, though, that I do turn down because I say you really don't need that. Instead, you need cheeks or something like that. You know, you need that like cheekbone rather augmentation to contour and give a little bit better proportion to your face.
What about a patient who is heavy, who has just a fat face because they're heavier? Will buccal fat reduction help them?
It depends, because a lot of the time it's not just their buccal fat, it's their neck fat. Mm-hmm. It's their lack of jawline definition.
Right.
And so you have to be realistic with them about really what their weight is.
So buccal fat reduction does not give you a better jawline?
Kinda, sorta. And why I say that is it doesn't define the actual jawbone. But when you are contouring the area surrounding the jawbone, it can potentially give you a more contoured and defined lower one-third of your face. So kind of.
Okay.
It usually, again, you have to take into account all of the other anatomical structures in that area in order to really come up with a more optimal plan for the patient. But that's a good start, I would say.
Men and women?
Men and women alike. I mean, I see probably 60% women, 40% men that seek buccal fat reduction. And it is just... it's the patients in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
That it's really not going to change. And I'm very realistic about it. Why are you squeezing your cheeks? You're not a buccal fat candidate.
I'm not.
I know you've wanted buccal fat reduction for a while. You are not. You would look gaunt.
Well, you know, what's crazy is I thought I was a buccal fat candidate and then I lost 30 pounds and,
I know. I and there you go. Your buccal fat pads were reduced.
Yeah.
And I will clarify in that, there's been some press on like buccal fat removal. I stress buccal fat reduction. I reduce the fat pad. We don't remove the buccal fat in its entirety because it actually extends a little bit further up in the face and provides nice support to the overlying tissues.
Okay, so can you, let's explain how you do it.
Yeah, let me go into it. So it's done almost universally, unless it's combined with a general anesthesia type of procedure, under local anesthesia with premedication. A tiny incision, literally, that's probably 5 millimeters, is made on the inside of the mouth. We numb up that area. We go right to the fat pad, reduce it in size. We basically tease out the fat. You don't feel anything because you're numb. One or two little dissolvable stitches. You look like you have chipmunk cheeks for about 3 to 5 days, maybe for the first week, but it's a more visual downtime. You're not in excruciating pain. You might be sore for the first couple days. I have you on a soft diet. But beyond that, you recover. You return back to normal. But you don't really see results for, I would say, you got to wait at least 4 to 6 weeks. You might have to wait 4 to 6 months, depending on how that buccal fat space contracts.
I was going to say the whole compartment needs to contract.
Once it's removed. Absolutely. So everyone's very different. We know that. But it can be a really nice procedure to complement someone's facial contouring goals when they're an appropriate candidate.
Wow. So increase in buccal fat pad reduction in 2023 is your prediction? Are you seeing more patients now?
I think it's
going to
continue. I think it's going to continue.
You've pretty much been the buccal fat reducer in DC for several years.
Yeah, I do a lot of it. But I think this recent increase, this barrage of...
Thank you, Leah Michelle.
Yeah. Of there was a guy on The Cut that wrote an article, and he was also a buccal fat patient and shared his entire experience. And it's actually a really good article that I read just this morning, which came out last week. But he shares his experience. He goes through the whole process. It was performed by one of our colleagues in New York. Who I respect and love. So, check out the article. It's kind of cool to see what the guy has to say about his experience.
Okay. Well, that's 28 minutes. So I think it's almost time to say goodbye.
I hope you all learned about not only buccal fat, but otoplasty, facial plastic surgery bonanza in 2023.
Absolutely. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to talk in our next podcast about something that I think a lot of our patients have asked me about particularly, and that is... I gave the teaser just a minute ago, my 30-pound weight loss.
Oh.
And how I did that, why I did that. I think it's a story that a lot of people will be able to relate to.
100%. And if you haven't finished White Lotus, finish it, please.
And if you haven't started watching Harry and Meghan, consider yourself lucky.
Oh, stop it.
Okay. Well, that's it, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
That's a wrap. Remember to share the podcast with your friends. Follow the docs on Instagram at SomanicMD, at Dr. Troy Pittman, and at DC Dynamic Duo. To learn more about the procedures discussed on today's podcast, visit www.SomanicPittmanMD.com. That's www.SomanicPittmanMD.com.